Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Democratic presidential candidates have until tomorrow to qualify for the September debate, a tough climb for the lower tier, including New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, who joins us. Mayor de Blasio, welcome.
Thank you, Robin.
So I tweeted out, what should I ask Mayor de Blasio? And many people said, why? Why are you running? You are billed as a progressive for Medicare for All, but so are Sanders and Warren. You're very proud of your mixed race family, but there are Democrats of color running. So make your case. Why Bill de Blasio?
Robin, it's about the need to change this country urgently. America right now is not working for working people. This is the central thing I talk about. And we have to do something very, very different. And what I bring is proof it can be done. We instituted the $15 minimum wage, paid sick days. We now are guaranteeing health care for anyone who doesn't have health insurance. We're giving them a health care card. They get a primary care doctor. They pay what they can. These are real life things that are making a huge difference for millions of people. I've been able to do them in a really tough environment. And that's why I'm running.
Let's take inequality. New York is experiencing a homelessness crisis. Homelessness has hit a record during your time in office. You also praised a big expansion of the city's rent control law. We spoke to a Stanford economist who says rent control actually makes housing affordability worse in the long run because landlords have less incentive to do upkeep. She said, if you want to subsidize housing, give people a direct subsidy, build more housing. We know you try to do more affordable housing. That's a lot of cities have been running into trouble with that. Yes, your intention was to, make things more equal. But did it work?
Yeah, Robin, I appreciate all those points, but I'm going to give you some facts that I think will make you feel a little bit better, at least. So hundreds of thousands of folks already have been lifted out of poverty because of the things we've done to fight inequality, because of that $15 minimum wage, because of affordable housing programs. Let me tell you, rent regulation, rent control, it works. And I'm glad we strengthened the laws. We did a rent freeze for 2 years in New York City because we had those laws, and that helped immensely. We have finally gotten real progress in reducing our shelter population. So if you were to ask a lot of my colleagues in this presidential primary for their version of what they have done, some of them have had an opportunity to run something, but obviously not on this scale by and large. So I think that's why when voters are looking for proof of who someone is, what they're about, I got a lot to show here that I think could really, really help us change this country.
Well, and you had a chance to show it at the CNN town hall on Sunday night, but it was right out of the gate overshadowed by the story that has flared up in the last month and seems to have overtaken your campaign a bit. Let me just outline. This is, of course, the death of Eric Garner 5 years ago. His famous words, "I can't breathe," helped launch the Black Lives Matter movement. He was held in a prohibited chokehold by New York police officer Daniel Panaleo, who was fired by your police chief on the recommendation of a judge just this month, 5 years later. Now, you know, people asked you about this case and why did it take so long? And you talked about police reform, calling for more, and talking about what you've already done, de-escalation training, for instance. But you were heckled by an activist who was yelling out, "What about the four other officers who also piled on Garner during his arrest for selling loose cigarettes? Should those other officers face discipline?"
Well, Robin, I'll answer that, but I want to also first put the bigger question in perspective. Respectfully, we've changed the entire nature of policing in the nation's biggest city. All those things I talked about at the town hall meeting, I think they're a hell of a lot more important than whether a single heckler showed up. Literally teaching de-escalation training to every single police officer. Now, if you say, well, okay, what about what happened here? Why was there a delay? There was a delay because the United States Department of Justice told us not to act on our own disciplinary hearing. They told us they would take the lead. They failed to do so. But look, in the end, Robin, the biggest thing here is justice was served, and where was it served? Within the NYPD, and that shows progress and reform unto itself. This case now, there was one case in addition to Pantaleo, and that is the end of this whole process because all other statute of limitation issues have run, and this is the end of it. But what we have to do going forward is the much more crucial thing, just continue to deepen reform here and everywhere, and it can be done.
Well, also as a mayor, as Pete Buttigieg knows, you have to also have your police force on your side, and it one point they turned their back on you. It was, you know, during this controversy.
Well, should, Robin, wait a minute.
Let me just finish the question. Should also the laws be changed? I mean, here are police asked to enforce a law about selling loose cigarettes.
So first, the reason I wanted to respond, when you said they turned their back, a few dozen officers did, and out of a force of 36,000. But yeah, no, we've changed. In fact, when I came into office, the previous approach, it was very aggressive policing. There was stop and frisk being used on a wide level. We ended stop and frisk the way it was being used.
But did you end it completely? Because I thought some people were critical that this is the windows theory that, you know, if you check on things as little as a broken window or, you know, a stop and frisk, it'll get rid of the even more serious crime. But do you feel that you have stopped that enough? Some of your critics would say no.
Stop and frisk as a strategy. There's very few stops now, and they're only done when there's a specific rationale, which is the only appropriate use of stop and frisk. It's night and day. It's over a 90% reduction, and it has fundamentally changed reality, the relationship between police and community.
Yeah. There was another moment, and it involved police as well, a very powerful emotional moment in the CNN town hall when you were asked about the recent spike in police suicides in New York. It's happening in other cities, too. It's terrible. And an officer asked, how can you improve mental health for the military when it's so obviously bad among the police force? You had some answers for that, and I want to hear from you, but you also explain why this is something that hits home to you, that your own father, a World War II veteran, so was mine, killed himself, took his life when you were just 18. This is not something you are unaware of.
No. And Robin, so you probably know from your own experience, I mean, the folks who come back from war come back carrying a lot. In my dad's case, it was PTSD. He had been in one of the worst battles in history on Okinawa and lost half a leg to a grenade. And the emotional toll, I saw it as a young child, it got worse each year. He would push away help, and then he was gone. And, you know, he might have lived if he could just accept the help. And we've got today in America, we're losing folks who have served us because they still feel like there's some shame in asking for help. We all have to fix that. The government has to fix it with making mental health care just as accessible as physical health care. But we all have to speak up and say, if there's a mental health challenge, there is nothing wrong with it. Just come forward and let's get the help people need. It's there.
Mayor de Blasio, you know, as I watched you speak so passionately about this and powerfully in the CNN town hall, I found myself thinking, what happened here? Because, as you well know, you know, you had an upset win in New York, your family, mixed race, you know, there was a feeling, especially in the Obama era, of forward movement. And yet it feels like some air went out of that tire. And then we came across the New York Times article, how Bill de Blasio went from progressive hope to punching bag. And it talked about how you didn't seem to come across to New Yorkers as liking the city and that there was some sort of momentum that was lost. What do you think happened to that energy?
Well, I'm going to just tell you a different story that I think happened in truth.
Yes.
There's a difference between sort of the public discourse and then what people are actually living. I have young people come up to me all the time, young men of color, and say, thank you, I'm not stopped all the time by police. I have folks come up all the time and say, pre-K's changed my family's life. We never would have gotten early child education for our kid. We couldn't have afforded it. So that kind of... the dialogue among the folks who like to comment, you know, that's one thing. But if you go to everyday working people in this city, I think you'll find something very, very different.
Yeah. I'm going to do the lightning round. One sentence. Why will New York Mayor Bill de Blasio be the one that will defeat Donald Trump, which is what Democrats want to hear? One sentence.
Because I'm speaking up for working people, and he lied to working people, and that's his Achilles heel.
That's New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio running for president. Mayor de Blasio, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you, Robin.